So I want to pick up in August the 16th, 1923. There are some really wonderful messages coming now. The reason why Jesus wants his will to be done and the glory that he receives from it. Very important. So Louisa said, I was thinking to myself, why does Blessed Jesus have so much interest and want and love so much that his will be done? What glory can he receive from a poor, wretched creature's surrendering her will in his most high, most holy and most lovable will? Now, that is a very important question that when you go to conferences or give classes, people will ask you, how can I make that kind of an impression on God? Okay, so it's a very important question. So while I was thinking about this, my lovable Jesus with unspeakable tenderness and sweetness told me, my daughter, do you want to know? Because my love, that should be a capital L, my supreme goodness is so great that every time the soul, I'm going to say soul instead of creature, does my will and operates it because I want it, is the bit you underline. Not because we want it, it's because he wants it. I give her of my own, that means that he gives us of the divine. And in order to always give her of my own, I want her to do my will. Now, to do my will, the way it is expressed here by the translators, it means to live in the divine will. Therefore, the whole reason, the interest for which I want her to do my will, is to find occasions and means to be able to always give. So I want to give you one of the great statements made about love, and I can't remember who made it. Love lives by giving, giving all. It's one of the saints. Love lives by giving, giving all. And that's what you hear Jesus saying here, that he wants us to surrender to his will so that we give him an opportunity to be able to give on a divine level to us. Okay. So it is my love that wants, does not want to be still. It wants to run, to fly towards the creature. But to do what? It is to give. There's the give, give, give all the time. Notice it. And by doing my will, she comes closer to me and I to her. And I give and she takes. We're on the receiving end all the time. On the other hand, if she does not operate in order to do my will, she places herself in due distance from me. Now notice the decision is ours, whether we surrender or whether we stay at a distance. Rendering herself as though foreign to me. And therefore, she cannot take what I may want to give her. Now, why he will tell us in the messages coming up, the reason why it would be foreign is that his divine will fills everything and fills the whole earth. So if we've distanced ourselves from that, it's like, to use the language of some of the programs now, we're extraterrestrials. We put ourselves at a distance from the divine will, which is in everything and running everything. Okay. And therefore, she cannot take what I want to give her. That's very interesting, isn't it? So if you have a person in the room who is blind and deaf, and you hand out a bag of sweets, they can't see them and they can't hear you saying it. So they cannot receive what you're offering. So that's what he's saying, that we put ourselves in the position of not being able to receive by putting ourselves in the position of not surrendering our will. It's very logical what we're going to be reading now. And if I wanted to give her of my own, that is of the divine, it would be noxious and indigestible for her because her palate, unrefined and contaminated by the human will, would not allow her to enjoy or to appreciate the divine gifts. That's like saying, I go to Japan, I can't eat the food. My palate cannot deal with this. My digestive system can't deal with this. And so I'm in trouble by the fact that I can't deal with it. And that's what he's saying here, that people who are committed to their own will What did I do with that? Never mind. People who are committed to their own will cannot actually receive what he wants to give us on the divine level. So, therefore, my whole interest is because I want to always give her of my own. Now, he wants to give divine gifts, charisms, and graces. I'm going to have to get a drink. Divine gifts, charisms, and graces. And the person doing self-will is not in the way of being able to receive divine gifts. They can receive human ones. Okay, so that's the giving end of it. Now, the next bit is about his glory. As for my glory, he said, it is the same glory that I receive through the works of the creature who does my will. It is a glory which descends from heaven and rises again straight back to the foot of my throne, multiplied by the divine will exercised by that soul. Okay, so what gives him glory is that what he has given to us is received, multiplied, and sent back to him. In other words, the circuit of love is complete. The circuit of love is not complete in the one who does their own will. Nothing goes back to the Lord. On the other hand, the glory which those who do not do my will may give me, if there is any at all, is a glory foreign to me because it's not his own. Which many times reaches the point of giving me nausea. You can't take it. Now, you have all the references for all of that for the past 16 volumes. Nothing unholy or unworthy can enter the presence of God and all the rest of it. Okay. So more so, since when the creature operates in order to do my will by giving her of my own, that is of the divine, together with that work, I place, now this is infusing into us. Notice I said infusing. I didn't say fusing. Infusing, it's put into you from outside. I place my sanctity, my power, my wisdom, the beauty of my works, an incalculable of infinite value. So here he says, I give you a gift of absolutely immeasurable value when you actually just open up to the divine will, because he gives us his sanctity. Now, his sanctity is a divine sanctity. You're not talking about human stuff. You're talking about divine power. You're talking about divine wisdom. You're talking about the beauty of divine works. That's why they're of infinite value. I could say that those are fruits of my lands, works of my celestial kingdom, the glory of my family and of my legitimate children. Now, you know that the legitimate children are the children of the divine will. So that's Romans 8:19, that the whole of creation is waiting for these children. So how could they not be pleasing to me, he said. How could I not feel the enrapturing power of my supreme volition in that work of the creature who only operates to do my will? Now, put a little ring around only, because our problem is that you may do it and then you may do other things besides. And this is moving entirely towards complete 100% giving. So, if all knew the good of the divine will, that's the it, they would not let themselves be deceived, look at the word, by their own wills. Now, deceived is that the 99.9% of humanity is deceived, thinking that what they're doing of their own will is the good thing, is the best thing, and so on. Okay. So following on to this, in August the 20th, 1923, we have a very, very important message on sanctity in the divine will. Put a VIP on it. Okay. So Louisa said, I was thinking to myself, my good Jesus says many admirable things about his will and how there is nothing greater, higher, holier than the soul whom he calls to live in his volition. It's a wonderful definition there. Okay. If it were so, she said, who knows how many admirable things I should be doing? How many sensational things almost externally. Now, I doubt very much if that idea came from Louisa herself. I would think it came from the priest saying to her, if you're saying that this is the greatest holiness and the most incredible things, well, why are there no external works? And this is a very important answer to questions people will ask you. Okay, so it's the external things. Yet she says, Louisa says, there's nothing charming or striking. On the contrary, I feel I'm the most abject and insignificant person who does nothing good. While the saints, how much good do they not do? Sensational things and miracles. And yet he says, that is Jesus says, that the living in his will leaves all the saints behind. Now, it's a very important question and the answer is supremely important. And you're going to need this in teaching others. There's wonderful answers here for people teaching. Now, while these and other thoughts were passing through my mind, my Jesus moved in my interior. So she's going to get infused knowledge. And with his usual light, that's the infused knowledge, he told me, my daughter, when a sanctity is individual for a time and for a particular place, it has more of external prodigies. Now, you know that when you speak about saints, we say Rose of Lima. We say Padre Pio of Petrelcina. We say Bernadette of Lourdes. Now, notice all the time I've connected it with a place. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the way the church remembers saints. And Jesus says, if it's individual for a time and a place, there's more external prodigies. In order to attract those individuals, those places and those times. To be able to receive the grace and the good that sanctity actually contains. So, on the other hand, the sanctity of living in my will is not an individual sanctity. This is very important. It's not a devotion. It's not anything to do with individual sanctity. It's not assigned to doing good to certain places or to certain people at certain times. Rather, it is a sanctity which must do good to all, in all times, and in all places. You see, it's in the divine will, and the divine will is in everything, and there's no time in the divine will. It's a sanctity which remains eclipsed in the eternal sun of my will, which invading all, that means from Adam to Zachary, is light without speech, fire without wood, without clamour and without smoke. But in spite of this, it does not cease to be the most majestic, the most beautiful, the most fertile. Its light is more pure, its heat is more intense. The true image of this divine sanctity is the sun which illuminates our horizon. That's very interesting. So he's saying here that the image of this divine sanctity is the sun. He speaks of himself having the sun as an image, and he's going to tell us very soon that the sun is also an image of the sanctity of our Blessed Mother. And the reason is that it's doing good to all, it's giving light and help and everything to all, and yet it remains completely silent in the background. Everybody sees it, everybody benefits from it, and everybody neglects it. And then he's going to say that as we go on. And he's going to say, only if I take the sun away will they notice that they need it. In other words, it's so presumed. And he says that the divine will sanctity is like that. It's in the background doing enormous work, but not in a way that anybody can interfere with, which I think is terribly important. You see, if you have the person out there doing miracles, you can kill them off and the miracles stop. Okay. So the light is more pure, the heat is more intense. The true image of it is the sun which illuminates our horizon. It illuminates all, but without clamour. It is light, but it has no speech. It says nothing to anyone. The good it does, the seeds it fertilises, the life it gives to plants, and how it purifies the polluted air with its heat and destroys what can be harmful to humanity. And yet it's so silent. Now you see, you're getting an image of this spirituality. It's so silent that even though they have it with them, they pay no attention to it. Okay. But in spite of this, it does not cease to be majestic and beautiful and to continue to give good to all. And if the sun were missing, everyone would mourn for it, because the greatest miracle of fecundity or fertility and preservation of all nature would be missing. In other words, life would actually stop on planet Earth without it. Now, that's what he's comparing divine will sanctity to. You need to just think that one through. That's what he's comparing it to. And it is that important. So I want to give you a little heading for the next paragraph, God's Army. And you're going to need this in preparation for Drumantine. There was an awful lot of answers for Drumantine in what I was studying today. The sanctity of living in my will is more than the sun. The soul who is upright and fully ordered in my will is more than an army in battle array. Now, that is Song of Songs 6:10. Who is this coming up from the desert like an army in battle array? Her intelligence is ordered and bound to the eternal intelligence. Her heartbeats, affections, desires are ordered with eternal bonds. And therefore her thoughts, her will, and the whole of her interior are armies of messengers which come from her and fill heaven and earth. Okay, so I want to give you John 1:51 there, the ladder that connects heaven and earth, and all the commerce that's going up and down through that ladder. They are speaking voices. They are weapons which defend, and first of all, defend their God. I want to give you 2 Corinthians 4:10 for that. But this army is different to the armies of earth because it's silent. They bring good to all. They are true celestial and divine militia, which the Supreme Majesty keeps all ordered within himself, ever ready for all of his commands. So there's an army ready to do the commands of the army in chief. Now, a century ago, Maximilian Kolbe set up the militia of Mary Immaculate, and that everybody was to be completely committed to her so that she could carry out her battles and... somebody's phone. Yours. And so here the Lord is calling the people living in the divine will a divine militia. Okay. So he's calling us a divine militia. Therefore, if the language of army or militia is used, it means there is a task to be accomplished. And the task can only be accomplished with the guidance of the Supreme Commander. And only if the will of the Supreme Commander is carried out will the job be done. So it's a very interesting thing. So what you're looking at here is the absolute obedience to the divine will. So in the next paragraph, we have the Blessed Virgin Mary as the true exemplar of this sanctity in the divine will. So, and then there is the example of my mother. She's the true sanctity, a true sanctity of living in my will. Her interior was all eclipsed in the eternal sun of the supreme volition. Having to be the queen of the sanctity of the saints, having to be the mother and bearer of my life to all, and therefore of all goods, she remained as though hidden within all. Now notice the within. This is very interesting because this sanctity means that the divine will is in everybody and is in everything. You enter into the divine will and you are present in everyone and in everything. So you are praying from within the person. It's absolutely an astonishing thing. But the power of that is extraordinary. So she was hidden within all, bringing good without making herself recognized. Look at that. The emphasis that Jesus is giving in this message is that this sanctity works best when it's hidden. More than the silent sun, she would bring light without speech, fire without clamor, good without exposing herself. And I have put Song of Songs 4:15 there. Song of Songs 4:15. There was no good which would not come from her. And that's where her final title of Mediatrix of All Graces is going to come from. Everything is to come from her. Why is it to come from her? Because she's in the divine will and everything comes from the divine will. There are other ways of talking about it as well, of course. There was no miracle which would not spring from her because the divine will had complete dominion. By living in my will, she lived hidden within all. And therefore, she's praying inside of me for me. Isn't that fantastic? And when you're praying for your family in the divine will, you're praying inside of them as well. Isn't that wonderful? That's why I have this great piece about Bridie, because every night I pray in the divine will for the dying so that the Lord will give them absolutely everything they need and in the divine will. So I know she had it, you know. And the lily she gave me is the proof. Those of you who haven't seen the lily, she gave me a gift of a lily in the garden. So there was no miracle that wouldn't spring from her, from our Blessed Mother, because the divine will was operating within her. By living in my will, she lived hidden within all, and she was and is the origin of the goods of all. You can't improve on that statement, can you? She was so enraptured in God, so fixed and ordered in the divine will, that her whole interior swam in the sea of the eternal volition. Now, you'll notice if you go back one paragraph to God's army, and the Lord speaks about us as being fully ordered in the divine will. Now, the struggle we have in getting to that is that everything inside of us, our thoughts, our words, our actions, our motivations, our desires, everything has to actually be reordered around the divine will, whereas we started off with it being ordered around my will. Do you know what I mean? And so the struggle we have to get into this place is that reordering. Okay. And here you're told about Blessed Mother that everything was ordered in the divine will. She was so enraptured in God, so fixed, notice the so, that her whole interior swam in the sea of the eternal volition. She was aware of the whole interior of all creatures. Now, that has to be an absolutely superlative prodigy. Just take the fact that there are only approximately 7.5 billion on the planet today. That's not taking the numbers that have gone in the past and the numbers that will be, that she is aware of the interior of everybody. Okay? And she would place her own wonderful interior in order to reorder them before God. So what was she doing all those silent years in Nazareth? She was doing this. It was precisely the interior of man more than the outside that was in greater need of being redone and reordered, because the kingdom of God is within. The body is only the case that's carrying this extraordinary treasure. And so, having to do the greater, it seemed that she would leave the lesser. Now, what's the lesser? The lesser is the prodigies and the miracles and the preaching before millions and getting famous on the earth and all the rest of it that others do. So he said that's the lesser because the divine will is the source of that preaching, the source of that success, is the foot of the missionary, the voice of the preacher, and so on and so on. So she would leave out the lesser while she was the origin of both, because you had that at the beginning in the paragraph talking about the sanctity of the divine will, that the divine will is light without speech, fire without wood, and without clamour and without smoke. We've just read that, okay? So the divine will is the origin of both the external and the internal good that the saints do. Yet on the outside, it seemed that she would not do great and sensational works. She was known in the village of Nazareth as being a very nice lady, and she collected her water like everybody else and did her messages like everybody else. It didn't appear that there was... Well, yeah, I think you'd have to be blind not to notice the sanctity that was there. But it didn't appear there was anything sensational. So more than the sun, she would pass unobserved and hidden in the cloud of light of the divine will. So I want to give you Song of Songs 4:12 for that. I've already given you 4:15. So much so that the very saints have given of themselves, doing apparently more sensational things than my mother did. Yet, what are the greatest saints in comparison with her? They're just little stars. That's Daniel 12:3. Stars are symbols of the people of God. They're just little stars by comparison with the sun. And if they are illuminated, it's because of the sun. But even though she did not do sensational things, she did not cease to be also visibly, that's what I'm saying, you'd have to be blind not to notice the sanctity, also visibly majestic and beautiful, just barely hovering over the earth. I just love that expression. All intent on that eternal will, which with great love and violence, that's Matthew 11:12, the kingdom of God suffers violence, and the violent take it by force. That means you've got to fight for the kingdom of God, as we all know. You've got to fight every inch of the way to get every part of you reordered in the divine will. And it is a battle. If it isn't a battle for you, talk to me, for God's sake. Because it's a battle for the rest of us. And with great love and violence, she charmed and enraptured in order to transport the divine will from heaven to earth, and which the human family had so brutally exiled even into the Empyrean heaven. Now, I looked up the dictionary and they don't have Empyrean anymore. So it means God's actual home. Yeah, because it's not paradise, it's not the other levels. You know, St. Paul said he was raised up to the seventh heaven or something. And she, with all of her interior ordered in the divine will, would give no time to time. Now, I haven't come across that expression before. Isn't that fascinating? Mm-hmm. She would give, we would say she gave no time to earth. She gave no time to time. She gave all her time to eternity. So that's just a very extraordinary expression I just want to point out to you. She would give no time to time. I just haven't met that before. Whether she would think, palpitate, breathe, or anything else she would do. These were all charming bonds in order to draw the eternal word upon the earth. And in fact, she did win. And she performed the greatest miracle, of course, which is to let the incarnation happen. Isn't that a fantastic description? And then he says, this is your task, my daughter. Now, this is addressed to Louisa because her job is to open the kingdom of the divine will. It is to charm me and to bind me so much with your interior, all reordered in the supreme volition, as to transport the divine will from heaven to earth, that it may be known and have life on the earth as it does in heaven. That's the fulfillment in the Our Father. Have no concern about anything else. One who must do the greater has no need of the lesser. What are the lesser? All the external things. On the contrary, the field is given to others so that they may do the minor part in order to give work to all. I love that. Everybody needs a job to do, you know. So you give the minor soldiers in the army and then the officers do different things. Then the general does different things altogether. I know what is needed, he said, the time, the place, and the people. Oh, we'd need to remember that all the time, wouldn't we? When I have to make known my greatest works, also with external prodigies, because he doesn't stop working miracles. As for you, continue always your flight in my divine will. Just the eagle must fly high all the time. Filling heaven and earth, charming me so much that I may not be able to resist performing the greatest miracle, which is that my will should reign in the midst of creatures, which of course will be the triumph of the Sacred Heart. So August the 28th is about possession of God. Give yourself a title for that. This is very important. One of the things that I will speak about in Drumantine is the fact that I have a problem with Louise's writings. And the problem is that in volume one, Louisa has three spiritual marriages. And the 35 volumes sit on that relationship. And even with these three spiritual marriages, and she's the only saint I know who's had three, the 35 volumes sit on that, and yet she had to go through extraordinary purification. And the problem with us is, I don't know anyone who's had three spiritual marriages. Do you? Two spiritual marriages? No. One spiritual marriage? Don't put your hands up. So we're in a different field altogether. We're just not classified in the same field. And if we start getting this clearer in our heads, we will apply this material better to ourselves, I think. Because the Lord wants me to clarify, so that we actually know where we're coming from, where we are, where we're going, and that we know how to apply this material. Is that okay? So this is why he speaks about possession of the divine will in August 28th, because it presumes union with God. You can't be out of union with God and have possession of God. That's a contradiction in terms. Okay. So August the 28th here is a big correction for anybody who thinks they're flying high in the divine will. I was feeling highly afflicted, Louisa said, because of the privation of my sweet Jesus. As much as I called him and prayed him, he would not deign to return to his little exiled one down here. How hard is my exile? My poor heart was agonizing because of the pain of it. Because of the pain it felt for the one who forms its life and is far away from me. Now she says that the Lord is far away from her and the divine will is lodged inside of her. Now, so her problem is she wants to see him externally outside of herself. That's her problem. But while I was longing for his return, the confessor came, and at that precise moment, after I had waited for so long, Jesus moved in my interior just as the confessor came. So it's not convenient. So watch her reacting. She's been looking for him all the time, and then he comes when it's not convenient. I think it's fantastic. He moved in my interior, squeezing my heart tightly and making himself seen. And so Louisa said, "My Jesus, why couldn't you come before?" Isn't that fantastic? "Now I must obey. If it pleases you, you will come when I receive you in the Holy Communion. And then we'll be alone again and we'll be free together." And Jesus, with a dignified and indifferent appearance, in other words, you don't tick God off. And you don't tell him it's inconvenient. Try the incarnation. It was before Blessed Mother went through the marriage ceremony. Was it inconvenient? Mm-hmm. Try Saint Elizabeth, who gave birth to John the Baptist. Was it inconvenient? She was too old. try Abraham's wife, Sarah. Was it inconvenient? Did they have to agree and cooperate? So Louise's intimacy with him and being able to tick him off like this is fascinating. But I like his reaction with dignified and indifferent tone. My daughter, do you want me to destroy the order of my wisdom and to take away the authority I gave to my church? In other words, don't dictate to God. We do it very well. We like telling God what to do. I remember reading in some book that everybody knows how to pope except the pope. And everybody knows how to run a government except the people who are actually elected, because everybody else knows what they should be doing. And if you're watching a match on the television, you tell the players where to put the ball. From your superior position of not being involved. It's fascinating, isn't it? So afterwards, Louisa said, she said to Jesus, but tell me, my love, why don't you come? He did come, you know. And you make me wait so much as to almost make me lose the hope of your return. And because of the pain, my heart struggles between life and death. And Jesus, all goodness, look at this, said, my daughter, having placed in you the ownership of my will, that is the possession of God, I want you not only to possess the divine will, but to know how to keep it well, to cultivate it, to expand it, and also to multiply it. You're not supposed to take a gift and do nothing with it. Do you remember the story of the man with the one talent? And he gave it back and said, this is your talent. And he was punished, okay? So we have to be able to take ownership, keep it well, cultivate it, expand it, and multiply it. This is terribly important. Therefore, pains, mortifications, vigilance, patience, and also my very privation serve to expand and to keep the boundaries of my will in your soul. In other words, you need this pain in order to be able to stay completely spiritual. We have this problem, don't we? That it's so easy to slip back and to just relax into the human and relax into the ordinary. Okay. It is not enough. You need to put an NB on this one. It's not enough to possess. One must know how to possess. What good is it for a man to possess a land if he does not take care of sowing it, of cultivating it, of keeping it, and then reap the fruits of his toils? If he does not work his field, even though he possesses it, it can be said that he has nothing with which to satisfy his hunger. So it's not possessing that renders man rich and happy, but knowing how to cultivate well what he possesses. Now, that paragraph, you must put a VIP on the whole thing. In other words, if you don't use the gift, if you don't operate the kingdom, you lose it. And it's the same way I learned how to play the piano when I was a child, but my parents were too poor to have such a huge thing, and there wouldn't be room in the house for such a huge thing. So what do? You forget. So it is with my graces, Jesus said, and with my gifts, and especially my will, which I have placed in you as a queen. Now, I love the term queen as distinct from king. It wants from you the food, the crafting of your pains and of your acts. In everything, it wants that your will, fully submitted to it, would give it the honours and the cortege that befit it as queen. And in everything you do and suffer, the divine will have ready the food to feed your soul. And so you on one side and my will on the other will expand the boundaries of my supreme will within you. Okay. I can't answer the question, why is it not king? I'll have to find that out eventually. He says queen, not king. Maybe it's king in heaven and queen on earth. I'm just not sure. So September the 2nd, 1923, is about Louisa. Louisa offers the pain of humanity, separated from God, in addition to the pain of the privation of Jesus, and then the nations are preparing for war. I felt very embittered, she said, because of the privation of my adorable Jesus. More so, since making himself seen like a flash, he would draw me outside of myself, and while he would escape like a flash, I would be forced to see tragic and gloomy things and rumours of wars, as if they wanted to involve Italy. Now, when she makes a comment like that, I always laugh. He's trying to get her to look at the whole world, the whole global system. And everything's fine, but it mustn't involve Italy. Do you know what I mean? And here, this is a woman of great sanctity. The Lord is using her to bring the divine will on the earth. And you still have these little foibles there. So have mercy on yourself, won't you? Have mercy on yourself. So she said, I had to look at these gloomy scenes as if they wanted to involve Italy. Leaders of governments approaching other leaders. Watch this now. This is prior to the Second World War. And what did she see? Leaders of governments approaching other leaders, offering sums of money to make them fall into the net of war. So the Second World War was very well organized. From the month of January of this year, that's 1923, when one day I was in great suffering, Jesus had told me that he was making me suffer in order to give light to the nations, which, wanting to make war, wanted to drag others along, offering great sums to draw them to themselves. Now, we do know that there are people on the earth who finance wars, both sides of it, because they're going to benefit. Okay. So you see the sheer evil that war is, even before they fire a shot. What pain it was for me to go outside of myself to see people suffering, another war field being armed, and not to have my Jesus together with me to say a word to him, to snatch from him, even at the cost of pains, mercy for unfortunate humanity. Now, she doesn't really look at the fact of what she said above, and that is that the Lord made her suffer so that he could give light to the nations. That means that he would actually give wisdom and understanding to try and stop the war. So I spent several days in this state, she said, and my heart could take no more. I felt not only the pain of being almost without Jesus, but another pain so hard that I myself was unable to manifest it. And then he made himself seen for just a little, clinging to my heart, seeking refuge and rest, for he could take no more. And I clasped unto myself, and I said to him, my life, Jesus, tell me, where have I offended you that you do not come? What is this pain on top of the pain of your privation that lacerates me and separates me from you? That me should be small m's, because it's Louisa. And Jesus, all afflicted, told me, my daughter, have you perhaps placed in anything your will to offend me, that you fear that I have withdrawn from you? And she said, no, my Jesus, I want to die rather than displease you. And he said, well, then, a daughter who has always been with her father must be attentive on knowing the secrets, the manners, the reasons for the way he deals with her. Okay. I have been with you for so long, and you still do not know the reasons which force me to withdraw from you. Beside that, I want to give you John 14:5. Have I been with you all this time and you still haven't understood? Because we were told many times in volumes 1 to 5 that he withdrew in order to do the chastisements. But you have understood them, he said, and also from the grave evils that you saw, that I would come to you like a flash, and drawing you outside of myself, I would leave you alone, wandering around the earth. How many tragic things have you not seen? And on top of this, the great preparations for war which the nations are making. Now watch this. This is 1923. Last year, that's 1922, France, by moving against Germany, sounded the first bell. Italy, by moving against Greece, sounded the second bell of war. Look at the way he's showing the thing is actually very well orchestrated. And then another nation will come, he said, which will sound the third and call them to the fight. What perfidy, he said, what obstinacy. So he's talking about the fact that the Second World War was very well planned. And this is 1923. When did it happen? 1939. It was planned absolutely in detail. It's frightening. So he said, this is why my justice, unable to bear so much obstinacy any longer, forces me to withdraw from you in order to be free in its course. And the pain you feel in your heart, in addition to the pain of my privation, watch this now, is nothing other than the pain of humanity separated from me. She doesn't realise she's identified with the whole of humanity. And therefore, because she has possession of the divine will expresses itself in her and through her. Indeed, Jesus said, it is a horrible pain, so much so that my heart writhed and agonised. And now, because of the bonds that you have with me, that is, she has possession of the divine will, you remain bound to the whole human family as he is. And you are forced to feel this pain in yourself. That is the pain of the human generations with their horrendous sins separating from me. So we know that all generations are in Jesus. And then Louisa enters completely into the divine will. The divine will in her makes her present to all the generations as well. So he's saying to her, you actually can't escape this pain, because it's expressed by the divine will inside of you. So courage, do not lose heart. Let me give free course to justice, and then I will be with you again, and we will pray and cry together over the lot of man, that he may no longer go wandering on the earth, but return to his God. We're going to do another little bit. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So September the 6th, 1923. I want you to put a heading on this, the origin of sin. And Jesus gives the origin of sin as something very, very interesting. He said, when you stop loving, sin starts. Because it's either love or hate. So, and then he says, the reason why Adam sinned. Louisa said, I felt petrified with pain because of the privation of my sweet Jesus. It seems to me that even his flashes, his shadow, keeps decreasing. My only support is his privation, which like drops of dew sustain the poor plant of my soul, burned and withered by his privation, giving it a thread so as not to let it die. There's something missing there. She doesn't say what it is that supports her. Okay. However, I was all resigned to his will. That's the important thing. And I tried to do as much as I could to continue my interior acts as when I used to take flight together with Jesus in his most holy will. Now, he's going to comment on this, that it's terribly important that even if you're feeling you can't pray and you feel that everything is dryness for you, that it is extremely important to continue the prayers, the acts. She said, but how differently I would do them. I would do them badly, not finding anyone, everyone, so as to give them to my God. So in desolation, she's saying it's harder to do what is easy to do in a time of consolation. Now, I was saying this in my interior, my Jesus, in your will, I love this, because she's now doing the act. I unite my thoughts to yours. And since your thoughts circulate in each created intelligence, I want each thought to draw from yours the love of your intelligence. Isn't that wonderful? In order to place each thought of the creature in the flight of love. Now, the summary of the 36 volumes is divine will and love. So the reordering is reordering in love. Okay. So she says, this flight reaches up to heaven, reaches up high into heaven before the supreme majesty. And blending with the eternal love, draws the love of the Most Holy Trinity upon the earth over all creatures. Now she's telling us how to do it. Isn't that wonderful? So she said, while I was doing this and other things, because this is just an example of what she was doing, my adorable Jesus moved in my interior and sighing, he told me, my daughter, you cannot be without me. Do you remember, put your John 15:5 beside that? Without me, you can do nothing. Remember? Even less, he said, can I be without you? That's fascinating. Because she's the only one on the earth who is in possession of the divine will. That's why he said, I can't be without you. Everything you feel in your heart is I. We would say is me. Okay. Your yearnings, your sighs, the martyrdom you suffer because you are without me, it's me. I. It is my heartbeats that reverberate in you and bring you my pains and hide me from you. And this is why, when love can endure no more, surpassing justice, it forces me to unveil myself. Notice surpassing justice. He's going to explain to her in a minute where this justice comes in. And as he was saying this, he made himself seen. My God, who can say how reborn I felt just the instant she sees him? It's resurrection. And then he added, my daughter, you gave me the dwelling within you on earth, and I keep you in heaven inside of my heart. Now, there, that is the reality of truly living in the divine will. You're living a life on earth, but you're also living the life in heaven. You're living the life of the blessed. Isn't it wonderful? So while you are on earth, you are also with me in heaven. So it's actually not possible to be without him, no matter what level of pain we have. The divinity delights with the little daughter of the supreme will, having her in heaven with them as the Trinity. And since we have our little daughter in heaven and on earth, see the benefit for the Lord? It's not worthwhile for us to destroy the earth as justice would want to do. So he surpasses justice to go and show himself to her. And he said, all creatures deserve that we destroy them. Isn't that something else? At most, many cities will disappear. And that's because of the intercession that Louisa is doing and other victim souls as well. The earth will open chasms at several points, making places and people disappear. Now, let me just point out to you, as of the 21st century, you do know sinkholes are appearing all over the earth. And they are appearing in the most extraordinary places. They're no longer appearing sort of out in open places, but in actual built-up areas. One of the places very affected by sinkholes is Florida. People have been literally sucked down into holes in their house, literally swallowed up by the earth. It's quite incredible. The earth will open chasms at several points. Now, there are other kinds of chasms opening in the earth in the 21st century as well. And that is that in, I can name three places. One is in the east coast of Africa, from you know Africa that goes out into the Horn of Africa and then down towards the south. So you've got Kenya there and whatever the other countries are. There is a chasm that has opened from approximately Kenya down through almost the south of Africa. It has literally opened up like a huge river wants to run through it. And it looks, the scientists are saying that if this continues, there will be a new island. That part of Africa will be separated from the continent. The same thing has happened in Saudi Arabia. And you really wouldn't expect it in Saudi Arabia with all its sands. And yet it has happened there. And the third place that I know it has happened is in Russia, towards the east, towards Siberia. Huge chasms in the earth. And nobody knows why. and why they should happen now and why they should happen in a number of places on the earth at the same time. I'm only naming three because I can only remember those three. So he says, the earth will open chasms at several points, making people and places disappear. Wars will decimate the creatures, but out of regard for our little daughter, we will not destroy the earth itself, having given to her the task of making our will live on the earth. Now, what you're looking at there is the extraordinary power of someone living in the divine will. Because of her, we won't destroy the earth. Isn't that extraordinary? Therefore, pluck up courage. Do not lose heart too much during my absence. Know that I cannot last too long without making myself seen. I myself can't do it, he said, because he has to visit his home on earth if the divine will is on earth. And you never cease to love me, never, not only for yourself, but for all our dear brothers. I love that expression. That's John 20:17, our dear brothers. Because when Jesus rose from the dead, having the apostles all having let him down and everything, he said, go and tell my brothers. That's John 20:17. In fact, do you want to know why Adam sinned? I better stop, hadn't I? Maybe we should just leave it there and we'll take it up from there. You know this anyway. It's your territory. So we'll stop there because the others...